get sitting around them and playing with it that time, so you won't know it.
Well, maybe the, yeah, the friars. If they're any relation to the McIntosh friars, they ought to be talkers.
Well, he didn't seem to be, for he's kind of anxious to get back when they say that one of the boys is leaving.
Well, he probably didn't get much chance around Dave.
No.
Dave usually takes over then.
He's kind of talker, Dave.
Yeah, I've got to follow him.
Well, you'll need to come around, you know, he's coming in insurance, a dollar in insurance, years ago.
Oh, well, maybe she'll be here.
And of course, he's...
Yeah, I had one little boy who wanted to record.
Yeah, I'm there.
I used to take his old meetings to mine when your dad was mayor there.
Well, that's what I want to hear about. Anybody, you
heard? I heard him say that. We had these here socialists, I guess you could call it, get together down there. Quite a few of them there at that time. The 8, 9, and 10 or something like that? 8, 9, wasn't it? How much are they?
Well, he was mayor.
I'm pretty sure that he was down the Bergen School.
Arthur Lesher, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I heard him. But I remember the name for one, you know. And I
was
pretty small at that time. I was just a kid. I went along with my dad there. And we spent a day or two there. We stayed at the hotel.
You went down to here to...
Well, yes, that convention, a meeting that they had there. They had a rally there, a political rally, I don't know what you call it. And of course, we have no record or any literature or anything on that convention at that time. We just went up there.
The reason that there was no reason to take the GoPro.
The what?
GoPro.
What does that mean?
Norwegian paper.
Meaning what?
Huh?
What does it mean, the word?
Well, what would you call it?
Go forward?
Go forward. I guess. Mean the same thing,
yeah.
You know, we even had the secretarial book, you know, when I had a socialist local in Bergen there. And I was secretary.
You don't still have it, do you?
No.
Tell everybody.
Went down there on I think it was First Street Southeast or something like that. That used to be kind of the headquarters.
Oh, everybody went in there to do the rag, huh?
Well, it's where Santa had his restaurant.
Oh.
You know where that was? That used to be the headquarters.
Where was that? What street was that on? Is it still
there? I think
there?
It's First Street Northeast.
Is the building still there, do you think?
Yeah, I think it is.
Oh. Give me the address. Maybe I can take a picture.
Well, I'm not sure, but that may not have been the headquarters, but it used to be a kind of a meeting place anyway.
In the restaurant?
Yes. Uh-huh. Get together.
When
I go up and I will see that old building is there.
Yeah, I'd like to.
I think it was still there, that you can get a picture of it.
Take a picture of it tomorrow, huh? I envy men their overalls. Look at those big pockets. And then you have a pocket on the side.
Yeah, see, even bigger than that. See what I got only in one pocket. and this is nothing. When I was up in farm, I had repairs. I think I could repair most any kind of machinery just picking it out of my pocket. Bolts and nails and drawers and everything.
When you get stronger, I'll say it.
Yet, when we stand on a common platform of human interest, a common bond of friendship is created anew.
The aims for the conference just outlined might stand for the aims of the whole movement of the ACWW, to foster international goodwill and to unite the women of the world in a joint effort to secure peace and the improvement of living conditions. The post-war policy of the association is to cooperate with international organizations on a non-governmental basis, such as UNO, FAO, and UNESCO. And now let's hear from the chairman of the conference, Lady De Souza.
The invitation to hold the conference in Ceylon was given by the delegates of the Lanka Mahila Samiti, who, led by Mrs. F.B. de Mel, attended the last triennial conference in Toronto, Canada in 1953. The other delegates were Mrs. Dr. Ratnam, Lady Kumarasamy, Ms. Kurey, and myself. This is the first time this worldwide organization is meeting in an Eastern country.
I hope this will be the first of many held in Asia. The agenda of the conference is varied, as you'll hear from the secretary of the conference.
The subjects to be discussed will be home economic and family values, economic production and rapid industrialization, and the problem of overpopulation, conservation of natural resources, means of preserving and sharing the best of our national culture,
It's from Ceylon, their meeting of the women. It's on the Canadian broadcast or Canadian station or something.
This is Stella Gumo, superintendent of Women's Institute for that conference.
I'm sorry I wasn't here for your birthday. That sounded wonderful. How old were you?
From Saskatchewan, this is
J.W.M.
From Manitoba, Mrs. Forrester and Mrs. Grace Jasper. And from Ontario, Mrs. Hugh.
Are you all right?
Don't
worry, I'll be here in the bar.
Yeah, this is Fritz's ma, this isn't Mrs. Strum, you know.
Yeah, I know.
I thought maybe you could do for sure. Well, I was just
congratulating on her birthday.
Oh, yeah. She has got the tablecloth, you said? Did you see it? From Japan.
Gold color. I can't make out whether it's a linen or silk.
Oh.
Should have brought it on.
Oh, I wish you had.
Yeah. Well, are you going to see to get Mrs. Drummond for that?
You can't make out if it's linen or silk.
I'm just stealing her bit for.
Oh, uh-huh.
It was born in 21, then I was 36.
Is that your baby?
Yeah.
That's your youngest.
I have to figure out, you know, time was the best I can keep track of.
I know, it does for me already. You had creature?
I was born in near Breckenridge, Minnesota.
Oh, you were? You
didn't live that long. And my dad died before I was a year old.
Oh.
I came down to my grandfather's place and lived with him since I was 16.
Where was that?
In the Dane Prairie. That's 7 miles out of Bruce. The only time that river ever was the highest I remember was when I was working in Fergus there, you know, at when one, I can't remember what month it was, you know, at the dam broke. Dam, let's see, the river.
You worked in the telephone office?
Yeah, and not candles, you know, we used electric light.
Oh, you met him there? Yeah. He was going to school there and you were?
In the Northwest was in a sort of a Swedish school. He went there for the business course, and I took the animal course.
Oh, that's right, he was just telling me.
Well, you know, there's in the country out there, you see, but you couldn't see as far as you can.
Oh,
there,
no.
First I went to Willis, and I worked in a couple of offices there. And there, the van was flat. All was black.
You did? They picked up the other kids.
And they drove their horses. They had a stove in the cab.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Huh.
So, otherwise, they didn't come.
What kind of a cab would they have to have a stove?
Some makeshift thing, you know.
A stove in it?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Once it tipped over, I guess there's some excitement. Sort of heat it, you know, on their covers or their dinner pails, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a warm lunch on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
And they just enjoyed it. I used to be told to put plenty of butter on them. Yeah.
Well,
we visited more of that time when we drove with that old Surrey and the horses.
Mm-hmm.
But then we get the gold prices. Now it seems like it's too busy. It doesn't go very much. To visit our relatives then, now we don't get to see any of them or do unless he comes to town. Well, you see, he doesn't feel so good. He doesn't like to drive. He doesn't like to go in at evenings very much, and then the daytime he's usually busy. And so
okay.
Anybody has seen the tracks.
All of themselves, you know.
Well, at the time when I was young enough to learn, you see, my eyesight was poor. And that was only, you know, he wouldn't dare to let me try.
Oh.
I think so too, but then I wouldn't dare say so. No, my daughter used to have more faith in herself than she has now. She had an accident or two, well, not really that much, you know. Her husband sort of, ridiculed her because she didn't do any better. There used to be someone there every Sunday and during the week too, you know. But when they were married, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, it got so quiet, the young people, they were gone.
Yeah,
it had to be quieter, but that's how it had to be. But I was lucky. They're all living or close by, you know. Well, that's the way now. It's about 4 miles from Bergen. Next is Herbie's, that's about 3.5. And then Francis and Marie here.
Mm-hmm.
So two, Herbie's at 2. And Vivian and me have 3, that's 5. And Cheryl is 6, that's 2. I think that lady down here really has a lot of courage. She has 6 little children. The oldest one, I think, is about 9. And last winter she went into town. And took a course. She's going to, I imagine she'll come back this year and take some more.
Uh-huh. Oh, your mother as well.
I couldn't see very well for many years there.
What happened to your eyes?
Oh, no. I can't say that happened very often at our house.
No. Well, was she being?
Yeah, that gives her some time to herself, sort of to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty good at cooking. He's literally caught up a lot on that, you know. I've been something not so good as last year, Shannon. Yes, I've been cooked quite a bit.
Oh, because that's just the way that men had it.
That's where they belong, though.
Uh-huh. Well,
Dad must in them thick quilts and do lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
He was a, and he baked bread. Yeah, he did a lot of work that way.
Changes.
I don't know, for sure. Some are better, and then again, maybe some things are worse.
Yeah.
When you read the papers, you don't think it's a very good.
What?
They can blow up those things and it isn't going to hurt people. It's going to be safe.
Oh.
I wonder. Yeah. You know, they could, isn't it the bones too? It's the effects?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, there's so many things. What about those green thing, growing things, try spinach and things like that? They say that affects, it's affected by that too. Who was it, someone that always brought along diet counter when he was going to eat greens? I don't know, he was telling you about that, I think it was.
The
other thing that I remembered.
Uh-huh.
I said, no, I forget so quick.
Yeah, the mind, the what? No.
I got a taste of watching the park.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been a good thing because now I watch the time. If I say, well, I'm supposed to go at a certain time, well, I like to be ready at that time. I think I'm very often late for work. I shouldn't brag about it. But you know, if we didn't look at the time and be right on time, well, we'd lose our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what I got when I started to work at the telephone office. 15 hours a month. I was lucky. I stayed at a cousin's place and they were reasonable. They really gave me a bargain on my
room and board.
And then, but only a couple of months, then I had 15. Then I got the raise to 18. And then shortly after that, I got a raise to 20. And then I quit working in Fergus Falls. I was getting 21 a month. But then the last year I stayed at home and with the folks. Of course, my stepdad, he did charge a little bit, I guess it's six and a half a month. But otherwise, I had the rest then. Oh yes, if I was going to buy any clothes, I had to buy an installment plan, you know, I couldn't. A small switchboard. We were, let's see now, we were four, five, six, about seven that worked there in all. And four at the time. So, and then I moved to Williston. I got better wages there. $40 a month.
Oh,
pay $12 and $15 a month for room. 5 hours a week for board. See, I wasn't any better at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I was at first. Then I happened to stay with an old lady there. And she, I don't know how far she did it, but she charged me very little. So then I got more than for the past about last 6 months. Mm-hmm. But in Fergus, I would work 8 hour shifts. But in Williston, I worked from 8 o'clock in the evening. I had a night shift most of the time. I changed a little. Yeah, 12 o'clock in the evening, no, 12, 8 o'clock in the evening until 8 in the morning.
12 hours?
Uh-huh.
Two, some of them were Europe, huh?
Country?
Did you have a doctor?
Fine.
Huh? Just got them time. You were one of those that had them right quick.
Well, I know you were the first one.
I'm pretty regular.
Huh?
I'm
just good.
Yeah.
It's a taste for everything.
You don't remember it?
No.
But, I was just
to see him there, but at that time I went to see an eye doctor and I couldn't see hardly what was in there.
You can't read very much then with your eyes, huh?
Oh, yes.
You can now?
Oh, yes. Two pairs of glasses. They had the father could hold them. She was home quite a few years after Grandma Hayes died. Of course, then she married, you know, and then they were on their own.
Oh. They're just hysterical and feel that, but it does seem like there's more of those kind of cases than that.
Isn't that about that other trouble that you and the men have had? Yeah, well, I don't know. There's never been so much of that.
What do you say that is?
I just know.
He doesn't know
either. Well, I'll get your mom here. You know what that was?
Smell it.
Did you say yarrow?
Maybe, yeah, I think so, yarrow.
You certainly had a pile of it out.
I'm going to make me some tea out of that. That'd make delicious tea. Good for the liver.
You used to have some terrible
yarrow.
Well, the Indians used to, if it's yarrow, that was one of their major herbs, healing herbs for them.
Is there a lot of that stuff around?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's all over the ground.
That's real demons.
How Bill was coming on his report. He was supposed to write up on that their trip out to Mrs. Clarence Miller. Wrote and asked him to write up an account for the messenger, and he was supposed to get it by Saturday. Have it done by Saturday. And he was all excited. Well, I don't know, he's going to rush home and work on it then. Well, he wanted some sort of some help with it. Well, I lost it. What did they ask him out of all the people who went there? 60 some people there, and they asked Bill out of those two busloads of people. I got to think on paper.
I do.
I think somebody had a lot.
What do you think
of that interested in them?
Yeah, you should be around your mom and read them and really start talking about the male of the species. I had to get out of here.
He can't take it.
Leg is a
vegetable. Guilty conscience.
And it just goes off his back like water off a duck when I get to talking. But when somebody else joins in, then, boy, it gets a little bit too uncomfortable.
Well, we all three agree. Yeah.
Can't think of that
man. Not in your present state.
Really?
They can't sit there and live on the farm. But they wouldn't let me take that paper because I didn't live on the farm.
Oh.
But it's true. I suppose, you know, I had some coming in from the colliers when they put. And you know, then I would get 13 months of the Farm Journal, see, for what I had left coming from that Collier subscription. Well, so enough of that. And you know, it's that. So, there, my subscription was not accepted.
Well, they were postmaster, didn't they?
And then, yeah, and then I had to take another paper that, where I thought that they were advertising.
It's for Dakota readers.
I don't
remember ever hearing them. It wasn't there.
I thought that you went out there together.
Before I went out there. I don't think so. No. I met, the first time I met Pat was at Sanish, when he was living on a farm, by Sanish.
Where was that?
Sanish, Mountrail County.
Oh.
Where there's no, he was raising cattle mostly.
Oh. Then you met?
I was, after my work in Minnesota, I was organizing for the league in Minnesota in 1916. And late in the fall of 1916, then the state grain master of the state of Washington came to St. Paul. The league office was in St. Paul then. And they wanted me to go out together with him out to Washington and start the league organization work in that state. So I went along with him and we went by way of Omaha and Denver. And at Denver, we before going on to Idaho and Washington, we got the league organization work underway.
Mm-hmm.
I put on the first league member in the state of Colorado.
How'd you get him?
Well, the same way as I got these people here in North Dakota. You're using the same tactics. Getting things underway there and starting out a couple of new organizers in the state of Colorado, I went on to Idaho and landed in Boise. And I was there for about 6 months, something like that. And then we got another a person in Idaho to take charge of the league work in Idaho. So I was then free to go on to Washington. And we got several members in many of the farmers had already heard about the nonpartisan league through the opposition press. Not always a very good recommendation, but at any rate, they knew about the league, and it was surprisingly easy to sign up the league members. I remember Ray McCaig and myself. You may have heard of Ray McCaig. He was one of the star league speakers. He was a minister, used to be a minister at Fort Yates, North Dakota. Well, we went together up to Camus Prairie in North Idaho, and we went also in the through the Palouse country in the state of Washington, and we got as high as 20 and 25 members a day at $16 a piece, and it was nearly all cash. There were no postage checks to speak of. So the success was very good. Now we came to our headquarters were at Spokane. I had to get an office in Spokane, and I got $2,000 from St. Paul to buy Model T Fords. So I bought several Model T Fords. They cost at that time about $335. So we got quite a number of Fords. And then the problem was to find organizers to drive these Fords around to the farmers. Well, it wasn't so very easy, very difficult to get these organizers. This was towards the spring now, 1917. Then it should be said that the in Idaho, where we had a full league ticket in the field, a full national and state ticket in the field. The opposition, especially the Employers Association of the Inland Empire, which were stationed in Spokane, they were very uneasy about this election in Idaho. They were afraid that the league ticket might carry in the election. So they did everything possible to stop the league organization work. And in the spring of 17, I had to go to Seattle and other points in Western Washington. In the meantime, I had gotten word from person by the name of, I think it was, his name was Carl Edwards. He came up from California. He wanted to organize for the league. And I made an arrangement with him to meet me at a little place called Windlock. It was halfway between Seattle and Tacoma, 16 miles south of Chehalis, in the state of Washington, in Lewis County. So I went to this town where I met Edwards, and he wanted to get some information about the league work. So I spent some time with him there. And in the afternoon of the first day, we were sitting in a restaurant having lunch, and somebody came in to us and began talking to Edwards. And he said that there was someone outside, out in the street, who wanted to see him. So he went out there, following along with this person who had first talked to us. Well, it took, I expected him to come back to finish his coffee and lunch, but he didn't come back. So then I finished my coffee and then walked out to find out what the trouble was. When I got out into the street, there was a big crowd collecting. And Edwards was in the center of the crowd. And he told me, I asked him, well, what's the trouble here? Oh, he says, they want to chase me out of town. Well, why do they want to do that? Well, they say I'm disloyal. Well, I took about 15 minutes. The crowd was in a ring around us, and we were right in the center. And I took about 15 minutes to explain to them about the movement in North Dakota. Now, the Nonpartisan League at that time was not anti-war. It was not anti-war. But they had agents of the Employers Association of the Inland Empire, they had made people believe that that was the way it was. So I had to explain to them about the league. I told them about the various liberty loan drives which have been held in North Dakota. And I just happened to have the figures, the exact figures, and from the standpoint of per capita, right, North Dakota stood very high as far as disposing of liberty bonds were concerned, and also in other war work. Well, they listened, then they never said a word. They just listened, and they didn't seem to believe what I said. So after I'd talked to them a while there, the crowds began to disperse. And then after they'd all walked away, we walked back to the restaurant and had another cup of coffee. But they were not satisfied. I could plainly see, or we, I should say, we could plainly see that there was something that that was still. They wanted some more. They were not satisfied with. They wanted to make us guilty, whether we were or not. So I figured that something was going to happen a little later. Now, you're not finished with our work. So I told Edwards that I'll stay here overnight. I was due to go to Bellingham the following day. So we sat up in our room and talked for a long time. It was about 12 o'clock before we went to bed. Then about 1:30, there was a terrific rap on the door. Knudsen, get up! Well, I knew immediately what this was. So I turned on the light and started to undress. And I took plenty of time, and they figured that I didn't move fast enough. So they broke in the door, just simply pushed the lock and everything else, just pushed it right in. And when they got inside, they turned the bed upside down. They went into the drawers of the dresser, pulled out all the drawers. And they went into my traveling bag and looked into the traveling bag. Then they said, where's your gun? Well, I haven't got any gun. I'm a peaceful citizen. Maybe I shouldn't be peaceful all the time, but I am a peaceful citizen. Well, it must be here somewhere. Well, they couldn't find any gun, but they found something in my traveling bag, and they took away about $150 worth of cash checks and about $300 of postage checks that I had gotten from the farmers. Well, come on, get out. Well, I wasn't completely dressed yet. Well, I have to finish dressing first. Oh, it doesn't make any difference. You don't need that stuff anyway. So then one fellow came in there, and he had a long rope over his shoulder, and another guy came in with a tar bucket and brushes. So then we came out of the room, and I walked out of my room. Then Edwards, he came also out of his room. And the corridor in this hotel was completely filled with people. There was a wide stairway leading down to the lobby, and that was completely filled with people. So then we came downstairs, and we were told to pay for our room. Well, we hadn't been there all night. But that didn't make any difference, of course. Well, then one who seemed to be the leader, he said, well, I guess you know something about democracy. Well, I told him, I don't believe that you people know what democracy is. You seem to think that you are fighting for democracy over there in Germany. Well, I want to tell you one thing, that we are fighting for democracy here in the United States. We've got some Hitlers here too. No, not Kaisers.
Mm-hmm.
I beg your pardon.
That's right.
Yeah, we've got some Kaisers here too. Oh, that's just talk. And I mentioned again about North Dakota, and oh, that's just bosh. It isn't a reality at all. So then we were led outside, and about 200 feet or so away from the hotel, and there were some logs that were cut in two, and they placed us on these logs, on the stomach. So then one fellow said, bring the dope. Well, that meant the tar. So then they buttoned up the pants in the back, and pulled up the shirt and the underwear. And then they smeared as much tar as they could on the back. And then somebody noticed that I was bald-headed. Well, I'll pour some on his head. And he poured it all over my head. It came down into the ice. So then they said, now it's Edward's next. Oh, don't bother with Edwards. Edwards, he is more or less innocent. It's this fellow Knutson who comes from North Dakota and stirs up all this trouble. So they didn't do exactly that with him, but they poured tar all over his pants. You know, he really got it worse than I did. Well, then The leader said that, well, I think this will learn you a lesson. No, this is not the kind of a lesson that I want. And I'm not learning this lesson. The lesson is, we have been told that this is a battle to end all wars. This is what President Wilson has told us. And I'm in favor of ending the war and establishing democracy here in our country. That's what we need. Then they took us over to the garages where we had our Model T Fords, and they brought those cars out, and we had to pay for the storage. And then they put us in the seat, in the front seat, and somebody is trying to crank the Fords. Didn't even have a self-starter. So they couldn't get it going. So then they put it in gear, see, and then they just pushed the car ahead until the engine started to go.
Each one of you in a car?
Each had a car.
Each in a car.
So then my first thought was to, I was going north anyway, so I drove to Chehalis from Windlock. Windlock was about 16 miles from Chehalis. And by now it was towards 5 o'clock in the morning. And I parked my car close to a hotel on a street in Chehalis. And lo and behold, somebody was parking his car right alongside mine. And this was Edwards. He had thought of the same thing, that he was going to drive to Chehalis. Huh. So we got there together. Then we took a room in a hotel and tried to clean up. We couldn't get all the power off right away. It takes some time. Mm. Edwards, he was working. He had already started to work in the vicinity of Chehalis and Windlock. So he went right back to work, and I went north. I was scheduled to go to Bellingham, and. As I drove on and came to Tacoma in Seattle, the newspapers in Washington, the Seattle Intelligencer, and the Spokesman Review in Spokane, great big headlines about this affair, telling about, you know, Windlock had driven out a couple of Reds. I see. And then when I came back to Spokane, a couple of days afterwards, I got a word from Edwards that he had been part and federal again.
Oh.
They had caught him outside a small town, and they took him, and it was quite chilly at night. It was April. So, and they had a heap of feathers, and they put tar all over his body and rolled him in the feathers.
Mm-hmm.
And then they left him. Then as they drove along, you know, they said that they were talking about branches. Here's a pretty good branch. We can string them up here. This is a pretty good place. Now that was just by way of intimidation, you see. So they helped him out with clothes and something to eat and so on. Well, they and the farmers were really very angry at this. There was a meeting, as happened, of the state grange, right close by there, in Lewis County. And the members of this grange, they were so mad at what they had been reading the news accounts about these doings at Windlock. They got so mad that they were going to go march down in a body to Windlock and raise the town to the ground. Yeah, it's actually a fact. And the master of the grange, he had to be very judicious in his attitude here, and so he prevailed upon him not to go, not to do that exactly, but to make a protest nevertheless. Afterwards I went back to Spokane, and the work kept on nevertheless, and Edwards kept on with his work. But I think they finally made the thing so miserable for him that he left and went back to California. They had told him to go back to the land of sunshine and lemons. And they told me to go back to my old North Dakota home without candidates. But they were, as I've said, they were very much afraid that the League was going to carry in Idaho. There was a real danger of that. Mm-hmm. And they had set up a propaganda bureau in Spokane, another propaganda bureau in Seattle, and still another one in Portland, Oregon. Hmm. Now, we hadn't yet started in Oregon, but they had these offices set up, hired girls to do typewriting and other people to do various kinds of offices. And they got, they used the addressographs of the local papers, and they sent out all kinds of material that they had gotten from North Dakota, from the IVAs in North Dakota, mm-hmm. about how dangerous the Nonpartisan League was. Mm-hmm. And sometimes these addressographs, they wouldn't work, so the addresses were not legible. Well, they looked into the material in the envelope, and they noticed it was something about the Nonpartisan League. So they stuck it in our box. And we got in the office there, a pile of that stuff, almost a foot high, of all kinds of clippings from the Fargo Forum, and speeches by Jerry Bacon, and so forth and so forth. Some parts of the addresses that he had made against the Nonpartisan League. Langer was talking about the red revolutionaries who had invaded the great and beautiful state of North Dakota, and they should be driven out. A little paper after this to advise the people of the state, you know, how dangerous the Nonpartisan League was. Hmm. I was I went through Concordia, and I finished the undergraduate course in the University of South Dakota, and I was all the time, I noticed that there was something that didn't just click with the way things were being run by public officials and so on. So I was looking for something new in a way. But I wasn't certain. I didn't know anything about what it was. Yes. I got through with the undergraduate course, and then I noticed that I was paying particular attention to the professors of history and sociology and philosophy, and professors of economics, and these people, they seem to have the answer to the problems. And I became interested in what they taught, and I really made up my mind that I was going to be like them. That would be about the grandest thing in the world.
Be a professor.
So then the question was how to get money to go on with the graduate course. And money, of course, was not very easy to get. So just in that period, the farmers, they were coming out of their sod shacks, and new towns were springing up in the west. This was, by the way, the last frontier, you know, the great American West. So I figured that maybe this would be the best for me when it comes to making money. So I started in the building trades, and one of my first jobs was to build a barn and a house for a fellow out in the country by the name of William Ireland. And I took this job, and in my conversation with him, I noticed that he was talking about things which were at variance with what I had heard my professors mention. Well, I didn't say anything very much to him about it. I just listened to what he was talking about. But I figured that he was absolutely all wrong and all wet, and a man who, above all, had to be set right.
Was he a socialist?
Yes. So, but I didn't say anything, because he was my boss, and I wanted this job so I could make the money. So I had to be careful. But we got along famously. Then two Socialist Party organizers came around. They had books and pamphlets and a newspaper called The Appeal to Reason. And they wanted me to buy some literature. Well, I saw one book which was bore the title Doing Us Good and Plenty, which fascinated me considerably, and I bought that. Well, they figured that they had a person here who was really one of their kind. Well, as a matter of fact, I wasn't that. Not yet. Well, any rate, I got along very well with these two Socialist Party organizers, and they thought that I was a good fellow and all that. And as a matter of fact, I figured that I was conducting myself in a masterly fashion. So after they left, I began to read the Appeal to Reason and some of these books that I had bought. And I talked some more with Ireland. I kept on with my saw and hammer and didn't say anything. I didn't say very much for about 2 weeks. I was just thinking about things. Then I began to wonder how it all had happened. How is it possible now that I have been in the state that I had been in for such a long, long time, and I had never known anything about it? How could such a thing ever happen? Here I had looked up with the greatest honor and respect to everyone who had a high public office. Why, he was the one to really follow. And these were the people to listen to. And here, all of a sudden, all of this picture of solidity, you know, vanished. Just like twinkling of an eye. And I was, I can still remember it. I was in a daze for about 2 weeks, just thinking about these things. Then I got hold of the capital. I got to dig into this thing. So I got hold of Karl Marx's capital and began to study. And then, of course, I soon began to see just exactly what was the lay of the land. Well, from that time on, I still finished the barn that I was working on, and also the house. But from that time on, I lost all interest. All interest in building. Uh-huh. All interest in making money, and in going on with a graduate course in economics and sociology. That was absolutely gone. And the first thing I did was to join the Socialist Party local. Now, I was very much behind. Many of the others, they were in advance of me. They had seen this thing before I did. I was very slow in catching on. Oh, yes. He later became a state senator. I didn't say state senator exactly because I wasn't certain whether he was a representative or a state senator. But I said that he was a league member of the state legislature. Mm-hmm. Someone at White Rose had the capital. And then when I got to Fargo at one time, they had it there in the library.
Oh.
I began to peddle the Appeal to Reason, and I can still remember I was living at Wild Rose in Williams County, in northern Williams County at that time. I can still remember sometimes I would be on one side of the street and there would be one of my friends on the other side of the street. And I would be pretty sure that there was something wrong with him, and he had to be changed too. So I would dive across the street and engage in conversation with him, you know, on the question of socialism and so forth and so on. It was beginning to catch immediately. Socialist Party local.
Yeah.
And some of these people there, they were thunderstruck, you know, when they saw that I was young and this local. I had made some remarks, I remember, and I was basing it upon the ideas that I got in Concordia. So they were very surprised when they saw me walk into the room there and join the Socialist Party. They were wondering what had happened. That the necessity of capitalism and about the necessity of making the change from capitalism to socialism, that this should be the main task from now on. So then this was Debs came into the county there to hold a meeting at the county fairgrounds of Williston. And I wasn't slow in attending that meeting. This was, I think, in 1930. Now, I might be mistaken on the year. And I mentioned other dates, and I'll check these dates, see? Mm-hmm. And then notify you about any changes.
What did you think of Debs then when you heard him? Were you strongly affected by Debs?
What?
Were you strongly affected by Debs when you heard him?
Well, of course I was. By this time I was affected in many ways. Of course we were very, very glad to listen to Debs. I can still remember he mentioned particularly about the big capitalist, that big capitalist who had outlived their usefulness and that we didn't need them any longer. We can get along without these Wall Street moguls. Well, the applause on the county fairgrounds there was tremendous. People had come from many counties, from not merely from Williams County, but from Divide, from Burke, from McKenzie, and even from Montreal County. They had come to this meeting. I don't know how many people there were, but there were quite a few. There's a, in Williston, there are several people there who have a picture of part of the gathering at the county fairgrounds.
All came to hear.